I'm back with Monish Prabhai. This is our part of our Great Investor Series. Monish began his investing career in 1999 and has been using the ideas and philosophies of Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger ever since. Monish, so you are a person who invests using the value techniques. What does it mean to be a value investor?
Well, I mean, to be a value investor is, you know, investing is the art of laying out money today with the idea that you'll hopefully get more back in the future. And of course, if the future is not too distant and if the amount returned is multiples what you put in, then that's wonderful. So value comes in many flavors. I mean, sometimes a stock that's really cheap can be a value buy, and sometimes a stock that's really cheap cannot be a value buy. And the reverse holds true as well, where things that appear expensive may be a bargain. So one has to really kind of peel the onion to truly understand the business and then truly understand the cash flows that business is likely to produce over the next several years. And for most businesses, we are unable to do that, which is perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. We don't need to figure it out for every business. But for a small sliver of businesses that may be within our circle of competence, we may be able to figure that out. And when there's a big distortion between price and what something is worth, that's when the likes of me will step in, and the rest of the time we'll just do nothing.
Yeah, I want to talk about that because that's my favorite part of your philosophy is this doing nothing. And I often say, unless you're a teenager, doing nothing is actually an active activity. So you don't really care so much about the whole market. You're just looking at individual companies.
Yeah, I have never particularly cared about the market. I mean, actually, when I was starting Prabhai Funds in 99, you know, the NASDAQ, about 9 months after I started, hit an all-time high. Mm-hmm. And then went on to lose 80% of its value.
Yeah.
And I actually understood in 99 that when I was looking at the valuations of many companies that broader markets were elevated. But we did really well because I've never been concerned about the broader market. We picked stocks that made sense. And actually what was happening in the 99, 2000, 2001, 2002 timeframe was that boring kind of brick and mortar companies got really cheap, while kind of sexy sizzle companies, technology companies, dot-coms, got really expensive. And so, you know, if you look at the day the NASDAQ peaked in March 2000, was the same day that Berkshire hit a multi-year low. I think the stock dropped to about 40,000. Mm-hmm. And both events happened on the same day. And it was almost like money was being sucked out of Berkshire Hathaway and being dumped into all these, you know, frothy NASDAQ stocks.
Yeah.
So for a value investor like me, even in that kind of frothy environment, there was a section of the market that was really cheap. And that's where I went looking. And that's what I've always done. You know, I don't think Jim Cramer has too many great quotes, but one of his quotes I like is there's always a bull market somewhere.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there is always companies that are mispriced and underpriced at all times. It can be a small number of companies or it can be a large number of companies, but there are always businesses that are trading well below where they should be trading.
So what about these days?
It's the exact same thing. I mean, I think in what I find in 2017 is I find very little to buy in the United States. If I look in the last 12 months, the only thing I've bought in the United States is airline stocks. You know, we bought Southwest Airlines in last summer. And I think about a little over a year ago, I bought an airline leasing company, AerCap. But I haven't found much in the U.S., but I have found a good number of things to buy in South Korea, and I found a good number of things to buy in India. Mm-hmm. And again, so like Charlie Munger says, is you go fishing where the fish are. So if I look at the Prabhai Funds portfolio today, one of the things that really surprises me is more than 70% of the portfolio today, out of the 560 million or something we have, is invested in businesses domiciled outside the U.S.
Wow.
It's in China, South Korea, India, Europe, etc. It's the largest percentage it's ever been since I started. And I think for the bulk of the period that Pabrai Fund has been around, our international investments were usually well under 25%, 20%. So there's been a significant change, and I can see it going even beyond 70%. And even when I look at the U.S. stocks, you know, the 30% that are domiciled in the U.S., I have companies like General Motors, which have very strong amounts of cash flow coming out of places like China. So even though that's a U.S. company, a lot of its cash flows come in from outside the U.S.
You know, I heard a quote from you, and this may have been a while ago, but you were saying that you didn't care to invest in China because in China there are three sets of books.
That's right.
The first set is for the government, the second set is for the wife, and the third set is for the mistress. So which set of books are you looking at in China?
Well, that is absolutely true. I think one needs to, I think for most of the listeners of your show, I would say that probably best to leave China alone. Or if you're investing, then try to find a high quality, you know, mutual fund or index to go through. So I think in China, I just have one investment and we did a lot of due diligence. So I think in this case, there is indeed one set of books and such. So that was that. I'll leave the company unmentioned, but you know, the government is a large shareholder in that business.
You know, a lot of market participants like to get in and out of stocks. And if you watch, you know, investment shows, you mentioned Jim Cramer, you know, there's always an idea for the day and it's this idea of getting in and getting out. But Charlie Munger says that the big money is not made in the buying and selling of stocks. It's in the waiting. What do you mean? What is he waiting for?
Well, so I think one of the best examples, and this happened very recently with Charlie Munger, is he was recently mentioning how he read Barron's for 50 years from something like, you know, the 1950s to the early 2000s. And after 50 years of reading Barron's, he made one investment. He made an investment in 2002 in a company called Tenneco, you know, auto parts. And he put $10 million in 2002 into Tenneco. And a couple of years later, he bought the distressed bonds as well. But a couple of years later, when he sold that investment, it was $80 million that he collected. It was an 8x in 2 years. And then he took that $80 million and gave it to a very promising manager who was focusing on investing in Asia, a person named Li Lu. And that $80 million, I think my best guess is, it's sitting at around $500 million today. So, you know, from 2002 to 2017, and actually if you go back, it's really going back to the 1950s, but in this 17-year period, Charlie Munger took two decisions. And those two decisions delivered a 50x return in the U.S. and in international markets. And so that's really what he's talking about. And he did the same thing with the Daily Journal, which is one of the public companies that he controls. Is the Daily Journal was sitting on a bunch of cash. And then in March of 2009, during the depths of the financial crisis, they bought Wells Fargo and U.S. Bank. And they pretty much bought Wells at the absolute bottom tick when it was, I think, around $10 a share. And that is today north of $50 a share.
Right,
so
right.
Inaction and patience are very important traits, but they need to be coupled with decisiveness and willingness to act in size. So it's an unusual kind of trait to have someone who's happy watching the paint dry, but then when all the ducks line up, you swing hard.
Well, I think the answer is in being able to recognize when the ducks are all lined up. That's the hard part.
Yeah, and actually that's also not hard if you just say, I'm only going to invest in complete no-brainers.
Yeah, well, that's true.
So that's the key, is that if you're not convinced you're looking at a no-brainer, take a pass.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there's this quote from Pascal, all man's misery comes from his inability to sit in a room and do nothing. Would you say the same for money managers as well?
Yeah, I tweaked that quote a little bit. I say that all investment manager miseries stem from their inability to sit quietly in a room and do nothing. So yes, one of the best things that most investors and money managers can do is dramatically take down the activity.
But the exercise sounds very Victorian, very 19th century, because you said that the investment industry is set up the wrong way. It should be gentlemen or gentlewomen of leisure going about their daily tasks, and when the world is severely fearful, that is when they put their leisurely task aside and go to work. It sounds like an ideal way to live, but it must be harder than it sounds.
I mean, it is. I think temperament and patience, I think these are probably almost inherited traits, are very fundamental to being a great investor. And so, you know, to some extent, I think you have to be wired a certain way to be happy with that sort of a kind of approach to life. I mean, someone like Charlie Munger is very happy spending his time designing dorm buildings for the University of California, Santa Barbara, or, you know, reading esoteric books on science or global warming or whatever else. And he's perfectly fine with that taking up his days. And then, you know, when these aberrations show up in the stock market, he can, you know, very quickly act on those as well.
My guest is Monish Prabhai. He is an accomplished investor, and as you can see, is someone who thinks a lot about what he's doing. You know, Monish, a lot of people think that when entrepreneurs start businesses, that they take high risk, and that high risk is something that's very necessary in order to get a high return. But you say that's not really the fact. What is the fact?
Yeah, so actually it's a misnomer. You know, if you look at non-venture-backed businesses, entrepreneurs really are kind of like arbitrage players. You know, someone who's opening a Chinese restaurant is going to try to see if there are any other restaurants that might compete with him in the area. And if there are four of them, he'll probably try to look for another location. So entrepreneurs look for offering gaps and places where they can arbitrage. And arbitrage, by its very nature, is risk-free or nearly risk-free. And so entrepreneurs do everything in their power to minimize risk. And so what they're trying to do is low risk, high return, not high risk, high return. And that model for entrepreneurs is a really good model for investors. And, you know, this is the reason why Warren Buffett says, I'm a better investor because I'm a businessman. And I'm a better businessman because I'm an investor, because there's a huge cross-pollination in those two fields. And so it is a huge advantage if you've been an entrepreneur and, you know, started and grown a business, because the approach you've taken to achieve success there, a lot of those elements apply very directly for value investing.
Yeah. You mentioned in one of your talks that Bill Gates, when he started Microsoft, had very, very little capital actually invested. He really didn't put a lot at risk.
Yeah, well, the thing is, if you're going to say someone is taking a lot of risk, that has to mean that they have the possibility of losing a lot of money. Well, someone like Bill Gates was a college dropout, so his value in the job market was, you know, just maybe barely above minimum wage. And then the total amount of money Microsoft took from the time it started pretty much till its IPO was probably less than $50,000. And even the proceeds in the IPO, the company didn't need that. So between the time it started and today, they've never taken in money. So everything's been generated internally. And so Microsoft, you cannot say, was a high-risk venture. It was a venture with high uncertainty. And that's what investors should look for. I mean, the key trait of an investment that is likely to do well is one that exhibits low risk coupled with high uncertainty. Because when you have high uncertainty, markets hate that, and they will typically underprice companies with a lot of uncertainty. So if you look at a, let's say, if you look at a company like, let's say, ADP, which processes payrolls, you know, if you just pull up the stock chart, or you look at the dividend history or the earnings history of ADP, what you will find is it's like clockwork. It just continues to go up almost nonstop for 50, 60 years. That type of a business is a very low uncertainty business. And a low uncertainty business like that is not going to be underpriced. What you want to look for is a business with very high uncertainty. And there you can occasionally get extreme mispricing, and that's the time to step in, like Charlie did with Tenneco. I mean, the stock dropped to a dollar. I think he sold it for $15, but then it went to $55 after that.
Yeah.
So that's really what you want to do.
Again, a reason why I have Monish Prabhai with us. He is in our great investor series. Monish, thank you for taking your valuable time to join us today.
Always a pleasure, Steve. Thank you.
To find out more about Monish, to hear this interview again, don't forget to join the conversation at stevepomerantz.com.